As an adult and a mom of a son, both with ADHD, I know navigating the expectations of life with ADHD can be a challenge. But finding the right care and proper tools needed to succeed can be life-changing. With the right resources, you can turn your ADHD into your superpower. Done is an online ADHD care platform that can get you all the resources you need to help manage your ADHD, online visits, refills, and a 24/7 care team made for you. Starting to take care of your ADHD is as easy as 1, taking a 1-minute free assessment to see if Done can help. 2, booking an appointment with a licensed ADHD clinician as soon as today or tomorrow. 3, start receiving ongoing care, enjoy online visits, personalized treatment plan, worry-free refills, and 24/7 care. Take a free 1-minute assessment and book an appointment with a licensed ADHD clinician as soon as the next day. Get continuous care, insurance coverage, and 24/7 care team support with Done for just $79 a month and pharmacy copays as low as $0. Unlock your path to better focus now at get.donefirst.com/podcast. Done. Turn your ADHD into your strength. Welcome to the Your Village podcast, Parenting Beyond Discipline. Your Village is the most comprehensive site for evidence-based parenting classes available on demand at yourvillageonline.com. Our 50-plus classes give parents the foundation, steps, and tools for creating strong, healthy relationships with their children, resulting in responsible, cooperative, happy, and successful children and families. My goal is to help parents support their children in finding and reaching their own unique potential. The podcast is a place to learn about all things parenting and get your questions answered. I'm Your Village founder and your host, Erin Royer. Hello, everyone. So actually, I had this whole amazing episode already ready for this week, but actually got a little bit long, so I want to dig in deeper into some parts of it. I'm going to talk about it at the end, what it is, so you'll know for next week. But then I got this really strong urge, and I got inspired to talk about this topic today, which is the reasons many times that positive discipline doesn't always work. So what often ends up happening is either it worked for a bit, you'll have some tools that are working really well and they just stop working, or they just fall flat from the beginning and it's just getting no effect. Your child is pushing back, just isn't having it. So I work with parents a lot in small group chats on our membership group or in private coaching or answering questions after a presentation. And I get these questions a lot and I realize it's really helpful to dig into this. So I hear this. X doesn't seem to work with us, whether it's, you know, this tool or that tool. Choices doesn't work for us. 1-2-3 magic doesn't work for us. Or 1-2-3 magic used to work great. It stopped working. Timeouts don't work. Now that one, I definitely know because I definitely don't advocate for that one. And I tell parents, timeouts don't work. We need to do other tools. You know, the consequences aren't working in our house. A particular communication tool, you name it. Sometimes they'll tell me it worked great. Like I said, it'll work great for a while. And then it just stopped being effective, or their child is just refusing altogether. So I've walked through thousands of these scenarios with parents, and I've found 4 common reasons that are misconceptions, oversights, in using techniques effectively. So the first issue I see is overusing a particular discipline strategy. So we get so excited when we've been struggling with a particular behavior and we learn a strategy that works. We start using it all over the place for everything, for coming to the table, for putting on shoes, toy cleanup, for getting in the car. It's like discovering a new flavor and putting it on everything, like sriracha, sriracha on egg, sriracha on my vegetables, sriracha on everything. But like an overused flavor, an overused discipline strategy will wear out. It gets old fast. The more it gets used, the quicker it wears out. Just as an example, this is just one of many, but I see this a lot with 1-2-3 magic. Parents often tell me it just stopped working, and it's because it's getting overused in these cases. It's so easy. The steps are easy. There's no guesswork. Once you know how to implement it, you know the pitfalls and the little genius tactics that I talk about avoiding. Those are the things that our kids will do to try to get around a discipline. They'll try to find those little holes, but when you know those and you can plug those up, this tool is so super effective that parents love it. So they use it on everything, for every exchange, from getting dressed, to getting teeth brushed, to getting ready for bed, and everything in between. It's meant to be one of many strategies, not the strategy. And I do talk about how it's a great first discipline tool, especially for setting boundaries with really young toddlers under the age of 3, up to maybe 3.5, and it absolutely is. But we need our discipline to be varied so that they can remain very effective. I'm going to talk more about this, how to do this, as we go through these reasons. But this takes some practice to figure out which techniques work best in different scenarios and different requests, different moods. As soon as we figure all that out, then it changes. So knowing and understanding the ins and outs of all the strategies is very, not just helpful, but pretty important. So another reason I see discipline not working is not advancing the technique with the child's age and development. Using the same tools too long or too late into development. Now, obviously, we don't have the same types of discipline exchanges with a 12-year-old as we do with a 2-year-old. The approach will change as the child develops, but sometimes it's hard to see or understand the changes when we're in the thick of the day-to-day. A tool worked so well just last week, and now all of a sudden, they're pushing back on it. They're just refusing. It's not working. This can be because they're maturing in ways that make the way that we handled it last week feel a little less than great to them. The choices is a great example of this. Choices can be used from ages of about 1.5 to 2, depending on your child's development. You might be able to start using it at 1.5. But for some kids, it might be a little better at 2, all the way through 10. But it's going to change vastly through those years. Our kids will drop hints. There's ways that they will interact with us when we use the tool that show us when they're ready for the next level of the tool, another level of responsibility. So that's why in the class on choices, I cover guidelines by age. But I also share the signs to look for that your child is ready for that next level, because as we all know, every child isn't going to be in lockstep with that exact age. It's not like, oh, she turned 4 yesterday, so it's time to do it this way now. No, that's not really how it works. Of course not. But it's a guideline and something to be aware of and to keep in mind how it's going to change as our child ages. But your individual child will let you know and show you the signs that he or she is ready for you to move that tool up, to give them, open it up and give a little more freedom in the use of it and the way that you address them with it. And so you'll know to move that up to the next level. Now, 1-2-3 magic is another example I see getting used way beyond its freshness date. It's really meant for kids 3 and under. And by 3, it should be phased out rather quickly. So it's a process that you're going to phase out over time. Around 2.5 to 3, you're going to start phasing it out. By 3.5, you're really using the tool maybe once or twice a week when you really need it to set a strong boundary and they're just not cooperating. If you've used it judiciously early on, it will still work when you really need it. But I also tell parents that if you're new to positive discipline, you've never really used any of the tools, it feels overwhelming, and you just are getting your feet wet, it's a really great first tool to start with, even if your child is older, even if your child is 4, maybe 5, but you want to use it and then you want to get up to speed on a couple of the other tools and start rolling some more tools in and phase that one out quickly, because if you have a 5-year-old, that tool's not going to work very well for very long. It's going to get overused. They're going to get really sick of it because developmentally they're really beyond it, but it's okay to use it a little bit at first. Okay, so there's a couple more common reasons I see parents struggling with discipline. This is including not using a tool correctly. So if you're missing a step, your preschooler finds the hole in the discipline and you don't know what to do, and then it becomes ineffective. They've just stepped around it. So I'm going to give some examples of this. So the first example is, and I use this a lot with 1-2-3 magic, one way that this gets used incorrectly is when parents count too fast. This doesn't give the child time to think about what choice they want to make. When we count really fast, it sets their thoughts into this panic mode. They're trying to consider the choice, but they only have a split second. So they're now moved into their fight or flight system, into that limbic response system. They can't think. They can't make a choice. They're overwhelmed. And instead of this logical mind of making the choice where they can make the choice from, they can't make that logical decision. And now the result of not choosing to put the toy away because they didn't do it in a split second or whatever it is coming down on them. And now they're upset about the consequence because they didn't even get a chance to make the choice. In addition, they're resentful on top of it because they don't feel like it was fair. They don't feel like this was handed out fairly. So now they're going into full meltdown mode. So we really need to count slowly. When we count slowly, we literally, I'm talking 3 to 5 seconds between the counts, gives them time to process and think about the response, the choice that they want to make. It may sound super slow to you and I, but you want to count like this. By the count of 3, I need you to put the toy away. 1, 2. So that sounds really slow to us, but they need that. It tells them, I'm giving you time to think about it. And you'll see their little wheels start clicking in there. You'll know that they're thinking about this. And they're going to make a decision. And most of the time, they will make a very good decision and decide to follow through. Now, in addition to that, there's many other reasons that 1-2-3 magic can become and be rendered ineffective in the way that it's used. So let's just think about an adult. And so imagine as an adult that we've been asked to make a choice about something. Let's say dinner. Do you want to have fish or do you want to have beef for dinner? Oh my gosh, you're taking it too long. We're going to have fish. Like, what? Give me a few seconds to think about it and come up with an answer. Same thing with our kids. You want to give them a chance. Just because it's a discipline exchange doesn't mean they don't deserve the time to think about that choice. So we want to give them the time to do that so they feel like it's handed out fairly. Okay, I want to give a couple more examples on ways that tools can be handled and render them ineffective when they're not used properly. And then in addition, I have one more reason and some more general tips about discipline tools and why they might not be working, why they don't always work effectively, and how you can avoid those issues. When we get back after a word from our sponsors.
This episode is sponsored by ByHeart. ByHeart is an infant nutrition company whose mission is simple: make the best formula in the world. Using the latest in breast milk science, ByHeart created a clinically proven, easy-to-digest infant formula that's made with organic, grass-fed whole milk, certified clean ingredients, and features a patented protein blend that gets closest to breast milk. Our blend includes the most abundant protein found in breast milk, alpha-lac, as well as lactoferrin, the number one protein found in colostrum, along with broken down, partially hydrolyzed proteins. ByHeart is an easy-to-digest formula. In addition to its patented protein blend, our formula includes prebiotics and an 80-20 whey-to-casein ratio, like in early breast milk, which is tailor-made for a newborn's digestive system. ByHeart is the only U.S.-made infant formula to use organic, grass-fed whole milk, not skim. Curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with the code parenting for a limited time. Additional terms and conditions apply. These later years of childhood have been flying by. As a mom, I want to not just be available to my kids during these last years they have at home, but I want to feel good and have the energy I need to keep up with their schedule and my own. So my health is a top priority. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. You're not alone on your wellness journey. Every customer gets one-on-one support to help you meet your goals. EQ's Daily Women's Microbiome Defense is a 3-in-1 capsule that supports your digestive health and promotes gut barrier protection. A healthy gut positively impacts immunity, mental health, sleep, digestion, and skin health. It helps regulate digestion, immunity against bad bacteria, and improve nutrient absorption. The gut has been called the second brain because it contains more than 100 million nerve cells. It is a vitally important piece to our overall health, both physical and mental. So to make sure my gut is working at its potential, I started taking EQ's Daily Women's Microbiome Defense to improve my digestion and nutrition absorption, boost my overall immune health, and help with sleep and stress as a bonus. head to myeq.com and use code PARENTING for 15% off Equilibria's microbiome defense and much more. That's myeq.com and use code PARENTING at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. Now that we're back after the break, I'm going to give another example for when a discipline tool isn't used properly. So my second example is when a consequence doesn't work. Now, there's many reasons a consequence might not work, but this is just one I'm going to give today. Sometimes a consequence will stop working when it used to work like gangbusters, but this time the reaction is, whether it's words or an action, I don't really need that. I don't care. So either they'll say it or they'll just ignore you. But you may say, I need you to pick up your toys so that we can go on the play date. We can't go on the play date until the toys are all put away. And they're just like, either ignore you or they're like, I don't really want to go anyway. Okay. I really expected that to work and it didn't. So now I've got nothing. So we just feel like we were rendered powerless. What do we do? Many times parents will just not follow through. They're like, well, they don't care. So they either pull out another consequence to try to get compliance because they really want to go on the play date. They want to go see their parent friend because they want to be around an adult. They want to get out of the house. They want to do something, but the child acts like they don't care. So like I said, they'll either pull out another consequence to try to get some compliance, or they'll just go ahead and go anyway because they wanted to go and they figured the consequence didn't work. So they'll have to figure out another time. However, what did the child just learn? Well, whether she actually cared or didn't actually care about the consequence, either way, your child just learned that if she acts like she doesn't care, she gets out of the consequence. And that is a powerful discovery. It renders pretty much every consequence from here on out ineffective. So if this happens, if your child acts like she doesn't care about a consequence, I don't care if she's 2 or if she's 15, you want to follow through anyway. If she really doesn't care, then you'll scrap it for next time. But this way, you aren't rendering all future consequences completely ineffective. So let's just say in the case of the playdate scenario, you want to go ahead and follow through and just say, okay, well, if you change your mind, we'll go after you clean up your toys and get your shoes on. In the meantime, I'll be here on the computer in the dining room. You just let me know. Then you'll find out if your child really cares about the consequence or not. If they don't, they won't get ready. They won't put the toys away. And you'll know for the next time, okay, I'm not going to use that consequence. But if they do, because oftentimes they will, go ahead and follow through and do whatever it was that you asked them to do. They'll be ready, standing there with their shoes on, ready to go before you can bat an eyelash. So then you'll know, okay, they do care about the consequence. And you called their bluff. So there are tons and tons and tons of examples I have seen with working with parents over the years where a missing step or a lack of knowledge in their child's development or proper usage of these tools will render it completely ineffective. They no longer can use the tool until they learn to use it effectively. And then the parent ends up feeling like either their child is just a particularly difficult child, that they're just an ineffective parent, or they're incompetent, or they get so frustrated, but they have no idea how to fix it. And it just becomes this downward cycle because the tools aren't working for them and they have nothing to use to start helping their child work on these skills that they need to set down boundaries and learn expectations. And this just isn't happening in the home. And then they're resorting to things like yelling and screaming and threatening and begging and pleading. And so the discipline can start to go downhill from there. So we really want to get a tight hold on these tools. You want to know them well. You want to know how to use them. You want to know what these common areas of pitfalls and areas where, you know, when used in certain ways or when the child finds a certain way around it that doesn't work, to get it back on track. So when I work with parents and they find out it's really just a lack of knowledge, that there's a few small tweaks that can make all the difference, and they make these changes, they can't believe that's all it was. They are so happy, but they're a little frustrated that they spent some time banging their head and trying to figure out what's going on, or, you know, get into this place where they were so frustrated with the discipline when it was really just a few small changes. Because these things don't come naturally, like I've said. Okay, the last reason I often see discipline strategies fail is not using our best practices for strategies. So what do I mean by this? What am I trying to say?
Well, in positive discipline, there's a particular tools that should be relied upon very heavily, while others are really sprinkled in, or they're a last resort type of tool. So there's a general recommended order. So of course, there are times and places and circumstances where the recommended order isn't just feasible, or you know you need to do an approach in a certain way because you just know you've done this before, you know this one works in this scenario and this is what you need to use. But in general, if the recommended tools are being used properly, if they're being used most frequently throughout the day, it sets up a really strong foundation for a lot of cooperation, which means we don't need to use these other tools nearly so often, like our consequences, like our 1-2-3 magic, like our choices. We don't need to use those so much. And then when we do need to jump to that particular tool that fits the scenario, it's not going to cause any problems short or long term because we're using them sparingly, we're using them intermittently, and because they're such a great foundation for all the other positive tools and cooperation, then they're just struggling a little bit because they're tired. They're struggling a little bit for some other reason. But you pull out these other tools that you don't use very often, and it's much more effective. And they're not going to disrupt your discipline ecosystem. So here's an example. As consequences, like I actually just alluded to, should be used as a last resort. Because once we get to consequences, we're working on next time, the next exchange. So we want to give our child every opportunity within reason to make a good choice. So there is a certain order that we want to use the tools in when we can. So give them an opportunity to make a good choice before we go to consequences. And because of this, consequences is one of those tools that often gets overused. It's fast, it's easy, it often gets compliance, especially early on. We can throw out a consequence from across the room with a baby in one hand and stirring the soup with the other. So we throw out the consequence in hopes that we can get this solved quickly with a little to no further intervention. Stop throwing the blocks right now or I'm going to put them up for the rest of the evening. And it works. Let's just say it worked. Your child stopped throwing the blocks around. Peace is restored, and you can keep going on with everything else that you're juggling. The catastrophe is averted. But what ends up happening is that this works for a little while until it doesn't. So too often, pulling the consequences out off the cuff, and they become ineffective. Then when we really need them as a last resort, when we have guided our child or given opportunities in making better choices and they just aren't making a good choice today, the consequence is also a lot less effective or ineffective because it's been overused and used in so many scenarios. So this is the same with 1-2-3 magic. Because it's easy and effective with young kids, it tends to be the go-to. It tends to get overused like I talked about earlier. But I want to make this point about 1-2-3 magic because what we really want to do is make sure we're building this foundation, an environment with the positive tools, making those our mainstays, and then using 1-2-3 magic when we really need our toddler to comply. Because 1-2-3 magic is, in essence, a thinly veiled consequence. Now, it does offer a choice first. So it is a choice-consequence combination, and those are great to use. So it's not fully a consequence tool. However, if parents start using it as the go-to tool and not using the other tools first, using them in a much more effective order, then it's going to become ineffective. So lastly, I want to make some general points, and that is it's okay to try something. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't mean it won't ever work. It doesn't mean it won't ever work even in this particular scenario you just used it in. It just may not be the best tool in that particular scenario at that time, or it might not be in that particular scenario, but you'll troubleshoot that. You'll figure it out. Some tools will work great for some things and they won't work well for others, but some tools just won't work that day for particular reasons, for some random reason, because your child is tired, because she didn't get a nap at daycare that day. She has a meltdown because when you are trying to tell her she needs to put the toys away, she doesn't want to put away the castle that she just spent all this time and effort building. And so she's feeling really upset about that. So now the choices of which blocks to put away first didn't work so well. So it's okay to have trial and error with discipline. It's okay to figure out what works and what doesn't work. And you'll learn when your child's tired what not to use or how to use it. And you'll learn in different scenarios what your child needs from you first in order to use a discipline tool. But every exchange doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't mean we need to forget trying that again or even trying again in that scenario. If we try it a couple times and it just falls on deaf ears, it's not working, we may need to go back and troubleshoot. Am I missing a step? Is there a piece that I'm forgetting? Have I been using this too much? You want to go back and see what is going on. Is it just not good today? Is there something particular happening? So you want to do some troubleshooting steps before you completely throw out using a particular tool. Or am I not using it up to her developmental level? Is she just kind of over this because we've been using the red shirt or the blue shirt too many times and now she's ready to move on from that? So we take a look, deeper look, we're going to problem solve why it may not have gone the way we had hoped. So if you have a tool and if you have an exchange and it isn't great and it doesn't go really well, you also want to remember what really matters in parenting is the relationship. It's the overall. So when you're using these positive tools and you're really making this the foundation of your day of interacting in a positive way and getting more cooperation, if you have a tool and you have an exchange that doesn't go so great, it's okay. It's okay to troubleshoot. It's okay that it didn't go perfect. It's okay to try again another time. So when we're using these positive tools, we're connecting. We're setting expectations with love. And it's the attitude underneath that they can feel, that they get from us, that we do what we do out of love because we want our child to become the best version of themselves. And we're helping them gain those skills. Whether it's cleaning up their toys before dinner, it's eating a healthy meal, it's setting up solid expectations at bedtime. Then when we have a tool or exchange that doesn't go perfectly well, it doesn't go really great, this is really just a little hiccup and you'll troubleshoot and you'll figure out the reasons why. Because our intentions and the way we approach things and our love shows through. So all I'm saying here is just don't be afraid to make a quote unquote mistake. Because I've had parents come to me and they just feel like they made a mistake because this exchange didn't go very well and they're afraid to use it again. They feel like they don't know how to use it or they feel like it's not a good tool for them. She had this big meltdown the last time I gave her the choices about the toy cleanup and I don't want to do that again. So what we're going to do is we're going to learn from that and we're going to use it a little bit differently next time. We're going to tweak it a little bit next time. We're going to figure out what we were missing or the way that we approached it that we're going to do a little bit differently. And that's okay because we're human and we're not going to do everything perfectly. This is a process in learning to have a relationship with a developing human. So, you know, because it doesn't come naturally, this is why scientists at universities still study child development and motivational psychology, because we aren't born knowing how to skillfully guide and support children and adults at each age and stage to help them grow into their best selves. So we have a lot of great tools. We have a lot of knowledge about child development right now and about how to motivate them positively. But it's still a process that we're discovering more and more. So that's why in the discipline tools classes, I go through these tools in order that I recommend as best practices for parents for the best opportunity for building cooperation, for self-esteem, and all the other positive benefits of the positive discipline. And I recommend that parents practice the first tools first. So there's a group of tools, three or four of them, that are kind of the first tools on a big basis. I tell parents, do these first, get these down, work on these for at least a week or two until you have them down really solid. Then start mixing in other tools. You go to the next set of tools, mix those in for a week or two, the next set of tools, mix those in for a week or two, so that you're already in this practice of leaning on the more positive tools first, and then the moderate tools, and then the ones that are really need to be used sparingly, like consequences, last. And you build it up in that order. I know it's great to have them all. I know it's great to know how to use them and mix and match perfectly, but it is a process. It does take time. It's a long-term relationship connection that you're setting up. So it's okay if it takes you a month to really get these down and get them down well, because that's what you want. You want them, you want to know them really well. You don't want to just be throwing them out. It's like, oh, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try this. You want to know them well and unfold them in a way that really brings the most cooperation. If you want to learn about the tools, you want to learn about which ones to use first, which ones to lean on, get those down really well, know all the steps, know the pitfalls to avoid, and you want to really build the most effective discipline ecosystem, you can see the discipline tools classes, discipline tools for toddlers, preschoolers, school age, which is 5 to 10, and tweens and teens. Also, getting kids to listen, power struggles, misbehaviors and solutions. I love this class. It's a great class. It digs into the reasons behind common misbehaviors. and lots of ways to circumvent those. Those are so important because kids will misbehave for a reason. They will continue a behavior for a reason. There's some kind of payoff, and you want to get underneath to what that is. Once you can get underneath to what that is, you can fix it very effectively. So, and another great class, honesty and manners. If you're struggling with some manners, you want to teach manners and honesty. Honesty development by age, understanding that also helps too. Also, the class on tantrums is another great one. Understanding tantrums, understanding how to work with those, how to help your kids work through them. It helps them develop their emotional skills, their social skills, so that they can work through those tantrums easier and develop those neural connections. Those are all on the website, along with 60 parenting classes on demand at yourvillageonline.com. If you would like to follow me on Instagram, you can find us at yourvillageonline on Instagram. If you have any comments or questions, please send an email to podcast@yourvillageonline.com. Also, I wanted to quickly mention the class for next week. So I was recording this class and it got really long. I'm going to divide it into two parts. And it's on parenting styles, because this is another basis for the way that we build our connection with our children. And there are four traditional parenting styles that were studied and coined in the 1960s. They're still the gold standard for today that psychologists use. But in addition, there's several other parenting styles that have cropped up in the past several decades that some have become popular, some have kind of risen in popularity and fallen off. We have seen some of the downfalls of some of those. And so these are really important things to note, and that we are not all fall into one discipline style all the time. We will move from one to the other. We're going to be a little fluid depending on the situation. And so being able to recognize that when we're flowing more into one or flowing more into the other and pulling back to the ones that are just much more effective. And so this is a really great, really interesting topic that I'm going to break down into two episodes to really help parents understand their parenting style, also where it comes from, because sometimes we really need to take a deeper look on where our parenting style comes from, why we are doing things the way that we do, so that if it isn't the most effective, we can make some changes to move into a more effective parenting style, or more predominantly into a more effective parenting style. Because like I said, we're going to kind of switch back and forth, but I talk about how to pull ourselves back into one of the more effective styles in that podcast episode also. So thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.